One of the most common themes that one comes across in Bhagavad Gita, which you will find in many chapters, is that one should be equipoised in heat and cold, in summer and winter, in happiness and distress, in honor and dishonor. So if you ask any reader of Bhagavad Gita, they would often say you should become detached. Like recently, when I was abroad in one of the Indian communities, where I was giving a lecture, I asked them, so what does Bhagavad Gita teach? They immediately said, we have to become detached. That is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. So I told them, if you go and tell anyone that you have to become detached in life, they will run away. That's the last thing people want to do in life. So often, even practicing devotees in ISKCON, sometimes while preaching, they speak things like that, because of which people become put off, they go away. So it is true that these kind of verses are found in Bhagavad Gita. Shitoshna sukha dukkeshu tata mana apamana yoho and all that. But that is not the essential purport of Bhagavad Gita. That is why in this commentary it is said that sometimes wrong interpretations are floated, because of which people are not given the right codes of religion, right principles of religion. The teaching of Bhagavad Gita is how to develop attachment for Krishna. Krishna himself says that in the 7th chapter, 1st verse. Maya asakta manah partha yogam yunjan mat ashreha. I'll teach you, Arjuna, how you can take shelter of me by becoming attached to me. So from there Krishna begins. In the 7th chapter and 9th chapter and 10th chapter, Krishna is talking about many of his opulences, by hearing which one can become attracted to Krishna. So that is actually the underlying theme of whole Bhagavad Gita. Chapter after chapter, Krishna is teaching how the living beings can become attracted to him and become attached to him. And by such attachment, they can, without much difficulty, detach themselves from the material world and go back home, back to Godhead. The goal of Bhagavad Gita is not mere detachment, as some people often talk about. If only detachment is being spoken, there is no charm in spiritual life. That is why in India, the youths have lost interest for spiritual life, because many Swamis have written so many books where they talk so much about material detachment. So the youths, not finding any juice or taste, they have given up the spiritual life. And now they are heading towards hell. So many materialistic engagements in want of some spiritual taste. So the goal of Bhagavad Gita is not to have some dry detachment from material things. The word asakti is used in Bhagavad Gita. Mayi asakta manah partha yogam yunjan mat ashraya. Like say, mat chitta mat gata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Narasa Krishna says, my devotees come together and they discuss about my pastimes, and by doing so, they get a lot of strength and taste. Parasparam bodhayanta means amongst themselves they discuss my pastimes and glories, and they become very joyful. And the joy that they get by discussion of such pastimes gives them the strength to detach themselves from the unwanted elements of the material world, which pin them down in the material world, in the cycle of birth and death. So we have four categories of people with respect to attachment and detachment. And the Mayavadis, they are detached from matter, but they are so detached that they are detached from Krishna also. So they are detached from matter and detached from Krishna also. The materialistic people, undoubtedly they are attached to matter, and they are detached from Krishna. The Sahajas, they have some attachment for Krishna, But because they are misguided and they have no spiritual master, they imagine that they have attachment to Krishna also. They have attachment to matter and attachment to Krishna. Because of which it's like keeping two legs in two boats. They get nowhere. And the devotees have detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna. So when we are becoming devotees, there is also a threat or danger of becoming a sahajya. Because both becoming a proper devotee and becoming a sahajya, both involves attachment to Krishna. The only difference between sahajya and a devotee is, a devotee is guided by a Vaishnava spiritual master properly while approaching Krishna. While a sahajya has no guru, sahajya is one who takes spiritual life very cheaply and does not follow any instructions and imagines that one has love for Krishna and such things. So, Prabhupada did not appreciate people talking about having visions. Like one devotee wrote to Prabhupada, Prabhupada liked one particular Krishna doll. You all have seen that Mukunda, you've seen? Picture of Mukunda, Lord Mukunda. He is sitting and by his side there is a calf. There is a calf also by his side. And he is carrying some bird in the hand. You know, very beautiful looking. Prabhupada, that was the picture Prabhupada liked the most. It was a very favorite of Prabhupada. Once Prabhupada mentioned in one of the temples that this is my favorite picture. So after that devotee heard it, after Prabhupada went, the devotee suddenly woke up in the morning and then he wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying that, Prabhupada, I got a vision that this Lord Mukunda, you know, he waved my hand and he called me, come here, come here. He called me like this. And then I came and then he started speaking to me. I got a vision. And Prabhupada said, don't take it seriously, just chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said. So, Prabhupada did not appreciate visions so much. He appreciated active service more. Actually, sometimes devotees in neophyte stage, they start getting into such moods deeply, because in neophyte stage we are not so qualified to think of such prayerful moods. Like one devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada had sent a devotee to market to buy something, Bhaingana something, and he came. And then he said, Prabhupada, I heard that Krishna says we should not just do action, we should also have a prayerful mood. You know, without prayer, action has no meaning. And then Prabhupada said, yes, sir, that's true. But did you bring brinjal? Prabhupada asked. And the devotee said, yes, Prabhupada. Then it's all right. Okay, no problem. You can have prayer as long as you're doing action. Otherwise, only prayer is dangerous. No work will move then. So Prabhupada was an action man, undoubtedly. He wanted people to do action, not just to be in prayer. But at the same time, Prabhupada recognized also, prayer has its place. Otherwise, why Krishna says, Ma Manusmara Yodhyacha. There is a prayer component, there is an action component. Both are there. Ma Manusmara is prayer component. Yodhya is action component. So Krishna told Arjuna both. An action should be preceded by prayer. Otherwise, action will be mindless. So, sahajyas are imagining themselves to be great bhajanandis, are great souls. So they cheat themselves without being properly guided by Vaishnavas. But devotees, they learn this art of mayaha sakta mana partha yogam yunjan madashrayaha by being properly guided. That is why devotees, they have to become detached from matter and attached to Krishna. So, like we are reading this verse, both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection of going back home, back to Godhead. So Krishna is telling his mother and father, Devaki and Vasudev, about how they were thinking of Krishna constantly. So I was telling in the morning today how Devaki and Vasudev, their personification of sacrifice, how they, in fact, in the subsequent verses you will see, Krishna also tells them about how in the previous lives for 10,000 years they ate only dry leaves, as Prishni and Sutapa and Aditi and Kashyapa, and now as Devaki and Vasudev, they performed severe penances. Chaitanya Krishna as their child. So, having becoming Krishna's devotee, when we read the pastimes, it looks very enjoyable. Sometimes when Krishna's pastimes are heard, devotees enjoy hearing them. But to be a part of that pastime, we will understand today in our talk, it requires very great qualification. For example, to be separated from Krishna or to be with Krishna, both are very intense experience. Those who are peace lovers, they have to quit the spiritual world. Why? For those who are peace lovers, for them there is Brahma Jyoti. In Brahma Jyoti, one can have Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. There is no exchange of loving relationship with Krishna. But there is one kind of peace lover who is also in spiritual world. As Krishna explains to Balaram, you will see, those who are impersonalists, those who become trees in the spiritual world, they are in Shantras, where they don't have much reciprocation with Krishna. They are just observing the marvelous activities of Krishna. And they are very silently watching it. And they don't render any service, because they think Krishna is so great that they can't serve Him at all. So, that is the only platform of peace. Beyond that, Dasaras, Sakaras, as one goes on, the interactions with Krishna are so intense that we will find in the pastimes of Krishna. Krishna is addressed as a jealous lover. This word is there in Bible also. What is the meaning of a jealous lover? A jealous lover means Krishna wants every living entity to exclusively love Him and not love anyone else. Similarly, Krishna also gives Himself exclusively to the living entity without any compromise. Krishna doesn't say, because I have too many living entities in the spiritual world, I cannot manage giving you love. So a fraction of my love I will give you. So please spare me for the other time. He doesn't say. Krishna gives Himself exclusively to His devotees. And He also expects His devotees to exclusively give themselves to Him. So in that sense, it's called as a jealous lover. It's mentioned in Nectar of Devotion, the word jealous lover. No? It's explained about how one who wants to strike a relationship with Krishna has to wholeheartedly serve Him. Mat chitta, mat gata, prana, bodhayanta parasparam. One should give one's life to Krishna, otherwise one cannot win the heart of Krishna. That we will find, so we will talk both about being with Krishna and being without Krishna, or being in the separation of Krishna today. And you will see how both the experiences are intense experiences. Whether it is Nitya Leela or Naimitika Leela, Nitya Leela is in the spiritual world, eternal pastime. Naimitika Leela is in the material world, when Krishna appears here and performs pastimes with His devotees. For devotees, there is no difference between the two. Whether Krishna performs Leela here or He performs Leela in the spiritual world, because the Vrindavan here is the replica of the spiritual world. So when the Lord comes here, He doesn't come alone. He comes with all His associates and He performs wonderful Leela. In fact, Kavi Karanapur, he says that the material world is more a blessed place than even spiritual world, he says, because the Lord performs His childhood pastimes in the material world. And in the spiritual world, Krishna is in a Kaishwara form. We don't see the butter-stealing pastimes there, which you get to see in the material world here. So it is even more very wonderful. So, great devotees have appeared in this world and they have glorified Krishna's pastimes very elaborately. I heard about Kavi Karnapur when he was a small boy. Shivanand Sen, he brought him to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, chant Krishna's names, he said. And the small baby kept mum. He didn't say a single word. Again Mahaprabhu said, please chant Krishna's name. And the boy didn't speak a word. He kept quiet. And Mahaprabhu said, just see, I have gone from north to south, east to west, all the places, and I have delivered the whole world and made so many people chant the holy names, and I have no capacity to make the small child chant Krishna's names. Just see the pity, he said. And then Swarup Damodar came forward to give an explanation. He said, my dear Lord, this child is so advanced, he is chanting Krishna's names in his mind constantly. I can easily see that. His mind is absorbed in Krishna, he said. And Mahaprabhu just smiled. And after some years, this boy was just 7 years old, 6 or 7 years old. Then again the child was brought to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu said, chant Krishna's names. Actually, the first time when he didn't chant Krishna's names, Swarup Damodar said, you know, when you said chant Hare Krishna, that means you have initiated him. After initiating, generally people keep the mantra very secret. That is why the child is not chanting, he had told him that time. Now second time, when he came at 7 years of age, Mahaprabhu told him, chant Krishna's names. Immediately the boy sang a Sanskrit prayer, beautiful prayer, which he himself composed. A four-line prayer. The meaning of the prayer is, the gopis keep a beautiful blue color flower on their braid, like that. Similarly, the gopis, they wear a beautiful blue color neelamani necklace on their necks. So this song basically says about how the gopis are constantly remembering Krishna by keeping blue color flower and blue color necklace, and that kind of prayer he wrote. Mahaprabhu was so pleased. He said, because he talked about the Karna, the ear, so he gave him the name Kavi, means poet. Karna means one who, the ear. Kavi Karnapur, he gave the name after hearing this poem. He said it is impossible for a small child to compose such a poem about the gopis. So later on he went on to become a very great devotee of Krishna, and he wrote the Anand Vrindavan Champu, where he mentions many pastimes of Krishna. So, when we hear the pastimes of Krishna and Yashoda and gopis, it looks very interesting for us. But you can see some of the pastimes, how much intense exchanges take place in these pastimes. I have spoken some pastimes of Krishna and the elderly gopis before. I would like to say some other pastimes, very interesting pastimes. The other day in the Sunday feast, I was telling about the pastime of Krishna asking for the moon, isn't it? I read an extension of this pastime, very interesting. One day, when Mother Yashoda was sitting in the moonlit veranda of the Nanda Bhavan, along with her gopi friends, elderly gopis, they were all sitting and chatting. And Krishna came from behind and started nagging Yashoda. He pulled out her veil, he started pulling her braid and nagging and trying to draw her attention. And Yashoda just looked at other friends and she sighed with a glance at them and said, please kindly pay some attention to, you know, my Lala, she said. And then one of the other gopis picked up Krishna and brought him to the front. And they all started asking him, my dear boy, what do you want? Do you want kheer? They asked. He said, no. Do you want fresh yogurt? Then he said, no, I don't want yogurt. Then, do you want cheese? He said, no, I don't want cheese. Then what do you want? They asked. Then he said, I want freshly condensed butter. He said. And that freshly condensed butter is there. He was showing the moon. And the gopis saw the moon and said, oh, no, no, this is not freshly condensed butter. Who told you? One of the gopis said, this is Rajahamsa, swan, which is flying across the lake of the sky. You see, the sky is blue. That is a lake. And that one, what you are seeing, is Rajahamsa, which is flying in the sky. And then immediately Krishna started waving his hands and legs and saying, he said, get me that Rajahamsa very quickly before it flies to the bank of the river. Then we may not be able to catch him. Get me immediately. Then another gopi said, no, 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 it's not Rajahamsa. It is called as moon, Chandra, she said. Then he said, whatever you may call it, if you call it moon, no problem, get me the moon. Whatever it be, he said. The mother Yashoda saw that the child is becoming very adamant. She wondered what to do. Then she picked him up on her laps and said, my dear child, that is not Rajahamsa, that is not moon. As you rightly said, that is freshly condensed butter only. What you said was right, she said. But in any case, I cannot get you that. Do you know why? Look at it. You find some black spots in that freshly condensed butter. That's poison. So that is not fit for eating. So don't demand that. You are not supposed to eat, she said. So then Krishna started asking, what is that poison anyway? Why is it touched by poison? Why can't I eat it? He asked. Then she said, I'll tell you the story how this poison came. So then she was a little peaceful that, you know, the boy is not too adamant now. At least he's in a position to hear. So she told him that, you see, long ago, there was a truce between demigods and demons, and they all came to the milk ocean. And immediately Krishna asked, how many cows came together to make the milk ocean? And she said, no, 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 no. This milk ocean was not made by the cows. Oh, mother, I think you are telling me lies. How can milk come without the cows? How is it possible? Then she said, the same Supreme God, whoever made the cows, can't he make milk without the cows? Because he only gave the ability for the cows to make the milk. So he only made the milk ocean. So let that be. Let me continue the story, she said. And then she said, so the demons and demigods came together and started churning the milk ocean. And then Krishna asked, did they do the same way as the gopis do, churning of the butter? He asked. She said, yes, yes, in the same way, exactly the same way, she said. And when they were churning the milk ocean, suddenly halahal, poison came. And Krishna said, Maya, I think you are telling me lies. I have only seen poison can come from snakes. How can poison come from churning of milk? This cannot be true. And she had to tell, no, 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 that is all the God's energy. It somehow came from the milk ocean. I'll tell you how the snakes got the poison. I'll tell you, wait a minute, she said. And then she said, first Lord Shiva drank the halahal and some poison spilled out, and that was drunk by the snakes, and that is how the snakes are poison in the first place, she said. Oh, then Krishna heard it. And then she said, and then from that ocean, this moon, what is it, Chandra, it raised from that ocean. So some portions of the poison the moon also got. That is how you find the pure white moon covered by some poisonous spots. So it is not fit for eating, so don't ask it, she said. In this way, when she was talking, then Krishna dozed and he fell asleep and he went to sleep. She put him in a cradle, golden cradle with a fluffy velvet, nice cloth. She put him to sleep. So sometimes Yashoda could evade Krishna like this, some days. But some days it was even more difficult. One such day, the gopis came to complain to Mother Yashoda and said, you know, your son is so mischievous. Right now you are very lenient with him. But let us tell you, tomorrow when he grows up, he will be too mischievous and you will not be able to control him anymore. Huh? Of course, the gopis were always laughing and joking about Krishna. They always enjoyed dealing with the small baby Krishna. Sometimes it is said, when Krishna would go to play with his friends, these elderly gopis would tell Krishna, please come to our home, we want to bathe you and dress you and we want to feed you nice prasad in our homes. And Krishna would say, no, I am too busy, I have no time, he would say. And gopis will literally catch him by the hands and lovingly drag him, and he will pull to the other side and they would take him to their house and they would bathe the child and they would feed him prasad. They delighted a lot. So, in this way there would be a loving tug of war between them sometimes. So when gopis came to complain like this, of course Krishna was very much there at home and he was also hearing the complaint, and Mother Yashoda was hearing. And the gopis said, when he steals butter from our houses and when we catch him by his hands, what he does, he twists our wrists and then when he feels the pain, he escapes from our hand and he runs away. And after going some distance, he stands there. From there he says, hey, if you ever catch me again, then I will make your baby cry. Don't touch me. He says, he gives a warning like that and he goes away. And then the other gopis said, do you know, when he comes to our homes, you know, in the early morning he comes and he releases the calf and the calf drinks all the milk. And then when we become angry, when we go with a great anger to him, he just stands by the side and gives a big smile. And then we also forget and we start smiling. And we forget for what reason we became angry, we forget. They were saying. In this way, he was signed as so many naughty activities. They were all reporting like this. Mother Yashoda was hearing. And Krishna said, my dear Maya, do you know, in the early morning, do you know why I go? My friends love me so much. I just go to meet them. In fact, they only call me. I go to their houses to meet my friends and they are blaming me for stealing butter. And he said, these are all liars. Henceforth, I will never go to their homes. And Krishna started sobbing and crying. And Mother Yashoda picked him up and put him on her lap. And then she was shyly smiling at the other gopis while caressing her son and telling him, my dear Gopal, don't worry. You are telling the truth and they are telling lies. I agree with you. Do not worry. And he was constantly sobbing. And the gopis were about to go. So Rohini came with, you know, in the Indian homes, they have a habit of giving kumkum, you know. When other women come, then they take kumkum and put for every Mataji they put. It's an Indian custom. So Rohini did that for all of them as an exchange of love. And then they all proceeded back to their homes. And then before they were proceeding, Yashoda Maya was telling, okay, my dear child, you are anyway telling the truth and they are telling lies. And then she looked at gopis and said, anyway, you all have scolded my child enough. I think you'll be pacified now for, you know, whatever he has done, you have scolded enough. And Krishna was hearing that. Huh? What did you say? Huh? You are saying that I have been scolded enough by them? He noted that point. And then after they all went, then Mother Yashoda said, my dear boy, within our own home, you can do whatever you want. Of course, you cannot do whatever you want. Here also, you cannot steal. But if you steal, it is understandable. It's in our own place. But to go to other people's homes and do such naughty things, it doesn't befit you. It's not proper for us. Your good child should not do such things. When she started saying like this, you know, then Krishna started crying and saying, why do you always doubt me? And then she said, again she embraced the child and said, don't worry. She was caressing him. Anyway, I didn't scold you. I was just telling you and all that. She pacified him. And then Nanda Baba returned home. When he returned home, as soon as he returned home, he was brightening the whole room with his smile and a very nice atmosphere. And then as soon as he came, he told Krishna, my dear Lala, come and sit on my lap, he called him. Then immediately Krishna jumped up from Mother Yashoda's lap and went and sat on father's lap. And putting a circle of his hands around his father's neck, And he said, my dear father, why do people hear other people's complaints about me and scold me? He asked, why is Maya always, you know, not believing in me, having more faith in the words of the other gopis? Why am I being scolded? And Nanda Baba asked, what's happening at home? He asked, what is the matter? And then Krishna spoke, he said, Maya, now you tell all the truth. What you have been doing till now, tell him. And then she reported what the gopis came and reported everything. Nanda Baba said, what are you saying? My jewel-like son will not do such things at all. And you have heard the words of the envious gopis, your friends, and you have become angry with my dear son. For this, you should be punished. And then he told Krishna, so because your mother deserves to be punished, don't go to her. You always be on my lap, he said. And the next moment, the unpredictable child jumped off from the father's lap and went to Mother Yashoda's lap and, you know, hugged her neck and sitting. So father and mother both were laughing loudly, surprised. So what is so surprising in this pastime? Krishna is complaining about whom? Yeah? About whom is he complaining? Yashoda. And then whom, in whose lap is he lying now? So love is very difficult to understand. Love is very deep. So basically what Krishna wanted, he wanted Mother Yashoda to show him unconditional love. And he could not tolerate her doubting his behavior. Actually, it is not that Krishna never did those things. He did those things. But he wanted his mother to still love, continue to love him without having any doubt in him. Continue to love him like that. And then he wanted someone to taunt Mother Yashoda. And who did that? Nanda Baba did that. So the problem was solved now. So he was back in mother's lap again. So I was telling how the exchanges of Krishna and his devotees are so intense. And it is not very easy to please Krishna in that sense. It's very difficult to please Krishna. There are innumerable pastimes. I am just taking one small sample of the pastimes to explain how actually the mind of Krishna cannot be very easily understood. What will be very pleasing to him? That is the reason why we take shelter of the devotees. In one sense, devotees are more easy to please than pleasing Krishna directly. And personalities like Mother Yashoda, Nanda Baba, they are all very, very exalted persons in the spiritual world. Tat anuragi jana anugami kalam naye dakilam ityupadesha saram. Rupa Goswami says, they are all anuragi jan. Anuragi jan means they have very great love for Krishna. And by seeing them, seeing their sacrifice and dedication to Krishna, we can get some kind of inspiration. So, how Mother Yashoda acts, how Nanda Baba acts, they are acting only to please Krishna. How to satisfy his heart. Now, I made an observation, how from Shantaras there is no service in Shantaras. And Dasaras there is service, but it is not very intimate. You go to Sakyaras, it's even more intimate. When you come to Vatsalya, it becomes thicker. And Madhurya, it's the thickest. The exchanges and the intimacy, it's too amazing. Actually, it can be mind-boggling to even understand. So that is why it's best to understand how to become a servant first. And then as one proceeds further and further, the intimate exchanges of Krishna and his devotees can be understood. Although Krishna demands such exclusive love, he also gives his devotee also great opportunity to enjoy his company. Like Mother Yashoda and Nanda Baba, you can imagine how much anxiety they may have. Just like you see, before this stage, when Krishna is even more small as a crawling child, one day he crawls and then he sees in the jeweled pillar his own image. But then he also sees a jar, sees a pot of butter. So he wants to eat that butter. When he is about to put his hand in the butter, then he sees that the image also is putting, about to put the hand in the butter. And then And Mother Yashoda comes from behind, as if innocently she is coming and watching in the front. And immediately Krishna is telling a lie. He's telling her, Mother Yashoda, do you know? Just now I saw a greedy boy. This greedy boy, as soon as he appeared in our house, I told him, hey, why have you come here? And he said, I have come to steal butter from your house. I told him, if you steal butter, I will report to Mother Yashoda. And we cannot give you, but he was so greedy. So, actually before that, what Krishna did was, he saw that boy's picture, image, and he said, you know, I will steal butter and I will also give you a share, so don't tell Mother Yashoda, he told him before that. But now what did he tell Yashoda? He told that the boy is stealing butter. No? And I stopped him, Mother. And by the way, I will tell you, my mother, I never wanted to steal this butter, please remember, he told her. So actually he told her what he wanted to do. So Mother Yashoda would understand Krishna's intentions and behave in ways that will be very pleasing to his heart as a child. So as a child, as an equal friend of his friends, as a lover of the gopis, Krishna's devotees exactly understood Krishna's heart and they behaved with him. Now I was talking about Krishna and his devotees together. In a few minutes we can talk about the separation of Vrajabasis from Krishna. There are five reasons given why the Vrajabasis never left Vrindavan to go to meet Krishna. We all know Krishna left Vrindavan taken away by Akrura, Krishna Balaram both. They went to Mathura. In Mathura they spent some 13 years, 6 months. After that they go to Dwaraka. They never returned again. Although there is a talk about Krishna returning very soon. He sent a message through Uddhava that I'll be back, you know, very soon. There are only 2 or 3 demons. I'll finish them and then I'll be back. He had said. So now somebody may have a question. We have been to Mathura and Vrindavan. Why can't the Vrajabasis leave Vrindavan and go to Krishna and be with Krishna? Wherever Krishna is, if they are feeling so much separation, why can't they go and be with Krishna? Very simple question. They can vacate just like they vacated, you know, Gokul Mahavan, they are going to Vrindavan. Vrindavan, Gokul, they Vrindavan to Gokul Mahavan, they are going. Why can't they go like that in the same manner? They can leave Vrindavan forever and go to Mathura or Dwaraka and be with Krishna. So there are 5 reasons given. The first reason is that when the Vrajabasis realized very soon that when Krishna goes out of Vrindavan, if they come to Mathura or Dwaraka, that is Aishwarya Dham. Being Aishwarya Dham, the madhurata or the sweetness of Krishna and his relationship with the devotees becomes reduced and restricted or even absent completely. When you go to Mathura or Dwaraka, they were not happy. For example, in Vrindavan, Krishna, if you see, Krishna embraces the trees, which are laden with fruits and flowers and honey and humming bees and all the beautiful birds in Vrindavan. Similarly, Krishna carries his covered boyfriends on his shoulders when he's in Vrindavan. He bows down to Mother Yashoda and takes the dust off her feet, considering her his mother, like that. Sometimes Krishna even bows down to Srimati Radharani. So these kind of pastimes are unseen outside Vrindavan. Sometimes he carries the sandals of Nanda Baba on his head. So this kind of behavior of Krishna is practically unseen in other places. So there is no sweetness in Krishna's behavior outside Mathura and Vrindavan. Just like Radharani told Krishna, there is a Radha Krishna Milan Mandir even today, if you go to Kurukshetra. That is the place where Krishna met with the Vrajabasis and Yashoda, Nanda and Radharani, all of them. So there, Srimati Radharani told Krishna, I am the same Srimati Radharani, you are the same Krishna. But here I hear the sound of the rattling chariots. I hear the sound of the elephants and the horses. And I see you like a king carrying bow and arrow, carrying all the kavach all over your body. And I see a lot of soldiers all around. And the scene, the war scene, it is not at all pleasing. Just think of Vrindavan. How beautiful Vrindavan is. There is Yamuna and there are beautiful trees of Vrindavan, where constantly the birds are chirping and there are cows moving, the humming bees are making humming sound, and all your devotees, they are all simple village people. She said, where is that sweetness here? I don't find that sweetness. So Krishna outside Vrindavan doesn't have that type of sweetness of Vrindavan. So this is one reason Vrijavasis thought that let us be here only and let us try to get Krishna back to Vrindavan rather than we going with Krishna. Then second reason, the gopis, not only gopis, all the Vrijavasis, they had a firm faith in Krishna's words. Krishna had promised them that I'll surely come back. So every day they would cook for Krishna in the morning and wait till evening, hoping that he will come back. And he wouldn't come. In the night there will be a big cry. They all would weep and cry. And then they will go to sleep. Next day morning they will rise early in the morning. They will go to the Nanda Bhavan to meet Yashoda and Nanda to offer them obeisances in the early morning. And then hoping that Krishna will come today. In this way they spent day after day, month after month. So they had faith in Krishna's words, promise. That was one reason why they never left Vrindavan. Krishna said he'll come back. In fact, he sent a letter to them. Just there are 2-3 more demons, I'll finish them and come back. He had sent a letter. So just like you have seen the Punjarika Lauta Baba standing there waiting for Krishna, in the same manner all the Vrijavasis waited for Krishna to come. Thirdly, it is said, when the Vrijavasis would go to the pastures of Vrindavan, when they would go to the Govardhan, when they would go to the banks of Yamuna, there they would get to see Krishna's footprints. And whenever they would see Krishna's footprints, immediately fond remembrance of Krishna would come. Not only that, there are spots where Krishna has performed pastimes in all over Vrindavan. When they would go, simply seeing those places would remind them of those activities. Just like even all of us, sometimes you go back to your old house where you lived, your old days will come to your mind. Even ordinary people can have this experience. If you studied in some school or if you stayed in some village, you go to that place, all the remembrance of those activities come to your mind. In the same manner, Krishna lived in Vrindavan before and he performed such loving pastimes with so many devotees. So wherever they went, they had a fond remembrance of Krishna's pastimes and activities. And that nourished their hearts. That made them feel as if Krishna was present with them. So they thought, this is better than to go to Mathura and Dwaraka and see Krishna in a kingly form. This is far better. So they were more satisfied in Vrindavan because Vrindavan was Krishna. So they were satisfied being there. And they were getting nourishment from there. Remembering Krishna in Vrindavan, like that. Fourthly, in order to keep them alive, personalities like Uddhava would come, Narada would come, and they would narrate pastimes of Krishna. And by hearing the pastimes of Krishna, they would become so surcharged with fond remembrance of Krishna that they felt the presence of Krishna more in his absence than when Krishna was personally present. Once Krishna was sitting with Shrimati Radharani and there was a bumblebee which came and was hovering over their heads like this. And then Madhumangal came and he drove away the bumblebee. And he told Krishna, Krishna, don't worry, Madhu has gone away, he said. And Radharani heard it. What did you say? Madhu has gone away. Because Krishna's name is also Madhu. She immediately, her eyes closed and there were stream of tears that flew from her eyes, came from her eyes. And immediately she fainted. And Krishna started trying to get her up. Radharani, I'm right here in front of you. I'm here. But Radharani thought of separation of Krishna. Krishna has gone away. So, actually for gopis or even other Vrijavasis, Krishna's presence or absence didn't matter much because all the time they were thinking of Krishna. So, that's why in their absence they felt Krishna's presence even more, it is said. By going to those pastures, green pastures, Govardhan and all those places. And because of that, of course they heard from Narada and Uddhava and such personalities who, by their kathamritam, they were able to bring the remembrance of Krishna to their hearts very nicely. So they were completely satisfied. This goes to show that they were happy hearing Krishna Katha and remembering Krishna than to see Krishna in a kingly form, in Aishwarya form. And lastly, fifth one, somebody may ask, what kind of devotees you are? A lot of your heart has left you and 13 years he is away from you. If you are still maintaining your life, it means you have no love for Krishna. Somebody can say like that, isn't it? How could Ujjavasis maintain their life despite separation from Krishna? That is also explained. It is said, Ujjavasis always thought, Krishna is surely going to come back. And if we die due to separation from him, then the news would reach his heart, reach him, and it would greatly pain his heart. And because they never wanted to cause any pain to Krishna's heart, they sustained their lives. That is how they could maintain their lives. Every time they would want to die, they would think, oh, no. We should not die. What will happen to Krishna? Thinking like that, they sustained their lives. And they went on and on living with the hope against hope, which is called as Asha Bandha. Rupa Goswami explains in Bhaktivedanta Samhita Sindhu also. With that hope that Krishna will surely come back one day. So, in this way, the Vajrasis also felt intense separation from Krishna every day, remembering Krishna, talking amongst themselves about Krishna, and the fond loving pastimes. They were waiting day after day for a long time. So, in the absence of Krishna or in the presence of Krishna, the exchanges are always very intense. That was the point I was making, because Krishna is a jealous lover, I said in the beginning. So, it is not like the jnani is residing in the Brahma Jyoti. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Remaining in peace for their own peace. Hardly they have to worry about remembrance of God or exchange with God. There is no exchange there. As Kunti also says, Namo akinchana vittaya nivritta gunavrittaye atmaramaya shantaya kaivalya pataye namaha. She is telling, my dear Lord, Namo akinchana vittaya, you are the property of your devotees. What is the meaning of that? You are the property of your devotees means your devotees, your devotees don't offer anything other than you to others. They only offer you to others. They offer only Krishna to others. That's the only property they have. No other property they have. All they have is only Krishna. And another meaning is that you have given yourself to your devotees to be orchestrated or played by your devotees. Which means sometimes devotees even tease Krishna. Or play with Krishna, just like in Vrindavan, you find the covered boys or Yashoda and all of them. You become the property of your devotees. And as far as jnanis are concerned, she is saying, Atma Ramaya Shantaya. For jnanis, you are Atma Ram. Atma Ram means you are in your world, they are in their world. They are in their world of Brahma Jyoti. Shanti, Shanti. Huh? And you don't reciprocate anything with them. There is no exchange between you and them. You keep them in their own place and you be in your spiritual world. So, jnanis cannot have any reciprocation. Actually, jnanis have given up their false ego, but they have not attained their true ego of their identity in the spiritual world and their relationship with Krishna. In fact, that requires more surrender. For example, to have a reverential relationship with Krishna, like what Devaki and Vasudeva were having. As soon as they see Krishna, they immediately fold their palms and they bow down in the jail of Kamsa. That kind of reverential relationship requires undoubtedly great surrender. But it requires even more greater surrender for one to constantly understand the demands of Krishna and keep pleasing him in various ways, as Mother Yashoda and Nanda Baba did in Vrindavan, or as the gopis did. So Prabhupada is making a comparison between Yashoda and Nanda and Devaki and Vasudev and Kunti Maharani. Prabhupada is saying Kunti saw Krishna as God. Devaki also saw Krishna as God in that mood of reverence and respect. So they were ready to perform severe penances to attain the feet of Krishna. Like you hear about Devaki. eating dry leaves for 10,000 years. So Yashoda trying to please Krishna is more difficult than someone agreeing to eat dry leaves for 10,000 years. So for example, Hiranyakashipu was ready to perform such severe penances. But of course at the end of those penances he wanted to become the god of the whole universe. You find that. Performing such severe penances is certainly difficult. But more difficult than that is to agree to have a relationship with Krishna and to constantly adjust one's emotions and thinking process and adjust one's ego in such a way that you know Krishna will be pleased. That is even more difficult. Now to put it more simply, we can see, for example, for a husband and wife, when they have a quarrel, they can live in two separate rooms, isn't it? Tyagat, Chantir, Anantaram. You know, Tyagat means by renunciation, you can have peace. So you can tell wife, you live in that room, I live in this room. No janjat, no headache. Let us live peacefully. Yes, there is peace. Initially, there is such a nice peace because imagine if a husband and wife have been contemplating on divorce for a long time, quarreling, shouting, yelling, screaming, beating, kicking. If they have been doing that, they have been going to court and everything. So to be in two separate rooms is certainly a very nice peace. But that is not the highest platform. The highest platform is when both understand each other and they stay together, understand the emotions of each other, understand the mind of each other, understand the ego of each other, and learn to exchange with each other without, you know, breaking that relationship. That is why it is said, love, one of the definitions of love is where there is every possibility of the relationship to break, but it never breaks. That is what is called as love. Yeah. You can see how, like I was telling you some past times of Yashoda and Krishna and Nanda Baba and all. It appears that, you know, Krishna is going to get wild on Yashoda and he will never look at her. It looks like that in many situations. But Yashoda adjusts herself so amazingly. So she, on one hand, she has to correct her child also, that you should not steal. On the other hand, she should make him feel that I am not correcting you, I love you more than my eagerness to correct you. My correction is a small, you know, small thing, but actually I love you so much. I love you this much, I want to correct you this much. This much only. But even Krishna is not ready to tolerate that also, because if a person who loves you very much corrects you, it's more painful, isn't it? It's very painful. Actually, we may not mind getting correction from somebody whom we don't know, because we have no relationship. But if we have a relationship with someone, if they correct us, it's even more painful, because we want to be in the good books of that person always. So when Mother Yashoda has made a small correction to Krishna, immediately when Nanda Baba came back, you see the behavior of Krishna, you find it's very difficult. So pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world are very enjoyable to relish. We can laugh, we can clap hands and enjoy, but when we are put ourselves there, then we will realize they are very intense experience. It requires high level of surrender. That's why I was telling about even Devaki and Vasudev, that they were ready to forego 6 children one after another, beget the child and hand it over to Kamsa to be killed. Can you imagine? First, second, third, fourth, all the children killed one after another. No mother, father can digest it. And why did they do it for? Only for the pleasure of Krishna. And they were living in the dark jail, like a godown, for so many long years, only for the pleasure of Krishna. There was a physical threat for her life, for Devaki's life in the beginning. You find Kamsa is catching her hair and about to behead her. And then even after that, they are ready to go for begetting your children and handing over to evil Kamsa. You find. And after all this is said and done, after that, lastly when Krishna came, they could not witness the wonderful pastimes. They were ready to, you know, act according to Krishna's will. So this is the greatest challenge in spiritual life, to act according to Krishna's will, and not act according to our will. So they did not demand anything from Krishna at all. No expectations, no demands, no remorse that Krishna, we did so much for you, this is what you are doing for us. You are leaving and going back. In fact, after Krishna went to Vrindavan for many years and he returned to Mathura, that time Krishna Balaram are speaking to Devaki and Vasudev. Actually, when Krishna and Balaram come in front of Devaki and Vasudev, immediately Devaki and Vasudev are folding the palms like this, you know, like because here God has come now. And Krishna is wondering, what is this? They are not dealing like we are children. And then immediately Krishna speaks in a childish tone that, my dear mother and father, you have done so much for us. We have not done anything for you. We went away. You couldn't even perform all the sanskaras on us when we were born. We went away to Vrindavan and now we have come back. And then immediately they assume the parental mood after that and deal with Krishna Balaram as children. Find that. So that sacrifice is something which we can talk about, and the sacrifice of Yashoda, Nanda and other personalities, that is another elaborate subject matter. I just gave a hint today, but if we talk about how difficult it is to constantly adjust one's mind and consciousness to please Krishna, that's a very difficult thing unless one is utterly surrendered. In fact, the devotees are trying to please Krishna and Krishna is trying to please devotees. It's very amazing how this relationship acts. In fact, the devotees conquer the heart of Krishna so much that they can even tease Krishna. Like once, you see, actually Srimati Radharani always is very happy to see the gopis dancing with Krishna. It is said, when Srimati Radharani sees Krishna dancing with the gopis, her joy increases 10 million times, it is said. And when the gopis see Radha and Krishna dancing together, their joy increases 10 million times, it is said. But once Krishna had given a boon to Narada Muni, but Narada Muni said, when the right time comes, I will take it, Narada Muni had said. And Krishna said, it's all right. But one day, the Sakis had made a very beautiful jula, julan, like we make jula here, with nice flowers and everything, very beautifully. And Radha and Krishna were supposed to sit in the jula and swing beautifully. So they were making arrangement, and Narada came there. And Krishna used to be afraid of Narada, you can imagine. How a devotee can put Krishna into transcendental fear. So when Narada came there and Krishna was telling the gopis, Narada is around, I am a little afraid. So gopis asked, why are you afraid? Because how he will behave, nobody can predict, he said. Anyway, Narada said, my dear Lord, now I remembered, you gave me a boon long ago, now I am going to ask that boon now. I said, oh really, what is the boon you want? How nice it will be for me to see you sitting with Lalita and swinging. These both of you said, I would like to see. So they were waiting for Radharani. Radharani didn't come. She was being dressed by other sakis and it was taking long time. They didn't come. The jula was ready. So Krishna also thought, okay, Krishna sat and Dalit also sat and all the sakis are singing. Then they looked around and Narada was missing. And Narada had gone to Srimati Radharani and said, oh, Radhaji, you know, you are dressing here, you don't know the story? You know, Krishna is singing with Lalita there, happily. And immediately Radharani goes into a special type of Mahabhava. She feels, oh really, Krishna doesn't want me. Krishna, it seems that Krishna doesn't need me. Krishna has neglected me, Krishna has ignored me. And I am here dressing for his pleasure. And then immediately her eyes are brimming with tears and everything. Narada Muni is now satisfied now, my job is done. And he goes back to Krishna and says, Krishna, I have told the news to Radharani. Says, Krishna says, just see, I told you. And then Krishna has to leave everything behind and run to Srimati Radharani and fall at her feet and say, I'll tell you the actual story, what happened. And she is not in a mood to hear, don't even look at me. So, actually, it's not that Krishna is foolish or something. Actually, Krishna and the devotees, they both act perfectly to please each other. How this arrangement is made by Yogamaya is beyond our understanding. Because Krishna has to please devotees and devotees have to please Krishna. So, a counterpart of this we can take in the material world, when we are living in the material world, while living in the company of devotees, we can also try to please the devotees. Because If you have to take part in that world, huh, in this kind of pastimes, you may wonder, hey, how am I supposed to act next? I don't know. What will please Krishna and what will not please him? It's very difficult to know. So, more easier than that to do is to endeavor to find out what will please the hearts of devotees with whom we are working here. If you cannot please the people with whom we are living around us, then how are we going to enter the spiritual world and please Krishna there? It's very difficult. It's a very difficult job. Often, we think about what is comfortable for me, what is convenient for me, what will not hurt my false ego, what will be pampering to my senses, you know, how many people are asking about my welfare. As long as we are very eye-centered like this, there is no possibility of making any spiritual progress. When you are very eye-centered, we have to think about other devotees. How can I satisfy this devotee? How can I please this devotees? One should contemplate on other devotees' welfare. So when we are thinking of others' welfare, then we will come to a selfless platform. Then we can rise above the shortcomings. And while contemplating, we will understand many times we fall short in our endeavor to please other devotees. Sometimes some people get hurt by small talks also. What is speak of, you know, slapping a devotee or beating a devotee? That's far-fetched idea. So it's a great challenge for us while being in the material world to live in the company of devotees of different natures and different temperaments, different mentalities. And all are endeavoring to please Krishna. They are all serving Krishna in different ways. So this is a very good homework we can do while living in this world. Because if we do that, if we learn the art of living in the company of devotees by learning to see the good qualities in every devotee and act in a way pleasing to their hearts, then probably when we enter the spiritual world, by that time we would have mastered the art of understanding Krishna's heart and pleasing him. So, Srila Prabhupada called the Nectar of Devotion book as Law Book of ISKCON. Because there it is explained about Krishna's qualities, Radharani's qualities, and the different types of rasas and the exchanges. Prabhupada called it a Law Book of ISKCON. Because the foundation of our society lies in the five rasas of the spiritual world and the spiritual exchanges that the Lord does with his devotees. And that foundational information is given in Nectar of Devotion. And after having read it, understood it, and appreciated it, then we can understand the pastimes of Bhagavatam with more appreciation. Like we hear today about the sacrifice of Devaki and Vasudeva. Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Krishna Bhagavan ki, Krishna Janmashtami Mahamahotsav ki. Thank you very much. Krishna.